This is episode 23 of UFO Encounters. This week I'm reading from Bruce Rapiano's book, Dominion Lost, A Scientist's Own Alien Abduction Encounters. When I have guests on my podcasts, I read their books to work out questions for the episodes. And when reading these books, I always find such fascinating information that never makes it into the podcast. And here I get a chance to give you a peek into the book. I've put a link to the book in the show notes, and I did seek permission to record the extract from the book, and the author kindly said yes. And so if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So I'm going to read from chapter one, which is called The Moment That Stopped, and this is what Bruce has written. It was nearly dusk on June 19, 1965, when my brother and six of our friends from primary school were playing a game of kickball in the front yard of our family's home just outside of New Haven, Connecticut. The end of the school term was only 2 days away, and I was looking forward to my first season of Little League Baseball and a summer vacation of other hopefully memorable adventures. Yet at around 8 p.m, an event occurred which quickly brought our grade school game to an end. It would also become my most powerful childhood memory and transform my view of humankind's place in the universe. At its inception, I instantly made a commitment to preserve every key observation of this profoundly impactful experience in my memory for the rest of my life. While standing near the end of the driveway, facing east, for some reason I turned my head to the right and was immediately awestruck by what I saw in the sky above me. In the pale blue and cloudless western sky, I saw an immensely large and stunningly brilliant white light at the 10 o'clock position. This was not a mere point source of light that could have been a star, planet, airplane, helicopter, or jet aircraft in the distance. It was at least 2.5 times as large as the full moon. To this day, it was the largest and most unusual light I have ever seen in the night sky. In all of my experiences of viewing the heavens, nothing else has come close to its dimensions or the magnitude of its luminescence. The light resembled the biblical star of Bethlehem, or a distant lantern with several asymmetrical points. Despite the size of the light and its apparent close proximity, the unknown object that I presumed to be the source of the light was utterly silent. I had been the first in the group to become aware of this incredible sight. From where I was standing, the light was partially obscured by a large oak tree in the centre of our front lawn on my right. It was only when I walked due south across the grass toward our house and past the oak tree to gain a better view that the other children started to notice what I was looking at. I heard a girl behind me yell, "What is it?" I now stood midway between our front door behind me and the oak tree in front of me, slightly on my right, looking directly west. As I resumed my observation of the unidentified light from the new vantage point, some of my friends joined me at this location. My recollection is that we watched the light for no more than 30 to 60 seconds. I could see that light was not moving at all. In trying to decide what it could be, I rapidly eliminated all of the usual suspects from consideration. The engines from a conventional aircraft would have been easily heard from that distance. Meteors are routinely observed to rapidly traverse the sky from horizon to horizon in mere seconds, not hover in mid-air. Also, very few artificial satellites were orbiting the Earth in 1965. The intense luminosity of the unknown object may provide some insight into its possible nature. I'm not sure that I can accurately describe in a quantitative sense how fantastically brilliant the light was. It was so much brighter than the full moon that it was even difficult to gaze at directly. Assuming that what I saw was an artificial flying object, I cannot even begin to estimate how many megawatts of power it would take to duplicate the intensity of light that it produced. A consideration of how a manufactured UFO could create such a powerful light like the one I saw may provide a clue as to its power source or means of propulsion. When an atom's electrons absorb incident energy from colliding charged particles or ionizing radiation like gamma rays, the vibrational kinetic energy of each affected electron is increased, often causing it to escape from its orbit around the atom. This is the process known as ionization, in which an electron in the outermost orbit of the atom becomes excited by incident energy. Alternatively, the transfer of energy to the electron may raise it from the ground state to the excited state without escaping from the atom. This excited state is unstable, causing the electron to soon decay back to the ground state by releasing some of its excess energy in the form of photons which carry visible light. A release of photons can also occur when ionized atoms that have lost an electron or neutral, non-ionized atoms gain another electron that subsequently decays to its ground energy state. In a number of ways, a spacecraft traveling within the Earth's atmosphere can create a form of ionization in atmospheric gases called plasmas that also produce light from electrons. The vibrational kinetic energy of electrons in atmospheric atoms could be increased by thermal radiation from solid or liquid fuel rockets or nuclear, fission or fusion, reactor-powered propulsion systems. Alternatively, a propulsion system that uses a strong electromagnetic field to push back against the Earth's magnetic field would attract free electrons around its field lines, increasing their rate of collision with atmospheric atoms and excite their electrons to create plasmas and light. Finally, regardless of the type of propulsion system, plasmas can arise simply from the thermal radiation produced by frictional forces between a vehicle moving at many times the speed of sound and atmospheric gases. However, it must be assumed that all or most of the aforementioned propulsion systems would operate at a high level of efficiency that minimize the loss of wasted energy not involved in propulsion to the surrounding environment. That could only mean that the tremendous energy that was released from the UFO and converted into visible light was in relative terms only a minuscule byproduct or the tip of an enormous iceberg of power generating capacity. Furthermore, this power system had been engaged without creating a sound. Such a system could not have been manufactured by any country on this planet in 1965. But shortly after 8 p.m. EST on June 19, 1965, I was only considering much more prosaic explanations for this sighting, until I was suddenly struck by an unusual but compelling idea. We were witnessing something akin to a tear in the atmosphere, or even in the fabric of space itself, rather than some type of flying object. Perhaps even a window into a distant corner of our contiguous universe or another dimension of reality altogether? As I contemplated this latter theory, the entire experience eerily transitioned to an even higher level of strangeness. As I gazed at our mysterious celestial visitor, there now seemed to be something disturbingly different about the surrounding environment. Why was it suddenly so quiet? Where was the incessant and almost deafening sound of the crickets and grasshoppers that could be heard around our heavily wooded neighbourhood every evening at this time of year? I'd certainly heard it immediately before we stopped playing kickball. I wondered whether I had temporarily lost my awareness of the insect's noise by being so absorbed in this fascinating new experience. I purposely averted my gaze from the object above me by lowering my head and turning to the left toward our home and the dense woods behind it. I listened carefully. The night remained silent. The cacophony of thousands of insect suitors calling out to their potential mates did not return. This was a moment of extreme strangeness. Yet the eerie stillness in the natural environment that I observed has also been associated with other UFO close encounters. Okay, so this week I was reading from Bruce Rapuano's book, Dominion Lost, A Scientist's Own Alien Abduction Encounters. If you want to buy the book, there is info and a link in the show notes. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up on Patreon. On the Alien UFO Podcast Patreon, when you sign up for $5 a month, you get an extended episode every week. For $2 a month, you get an extended episode every month. Just go to patreon.com /alienufopodcast. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.